I was reminded with this nice gift. Thank you. So at this time, we're going to call to order the February 14th meeting of the Audit Co-Committee. And at this time, we've been asked if we could go to a work session first on the audit of the Department of Education graduation rates. So I'd like to invite up the Audit Division staff, which has been our routine. Welcome, and please introduce yourself in the order of your presentation.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Will Garber. I'm deputy director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. Happy Valentine's Day. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today to brief you on two education-related audits that we released this past December. With me is Karen Peterson. She was the lead auditor on our audit that looked at improving high school graduation rates. That's the first audit we'll be talking about today. We've seen some modest increases in the graduation rate in recent years, but Oregon still ranks low nationally and has for a couple years. The second audit we'll talk about, and we'll bring up a second team to discuss that one, focuses on alternative and online education programs, and in particular, at-risk students in those programs. These programs make up a small percentage of overall enrollment in Oregon's public schools, but they have a disproportionate number of dropouts. So that audit discusses ways that accountability, oversight, and support for the programs can be improved. So that's just a little bit of context for the two audits. I'd like to turn it over to Karen, and she'll give you some details on the high school graduation rates audit, and then we'll try and answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much.
Hello, co-chairs and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us today. And for the record, my name is Karen Peterson, and I'm a principal auditor with the Audits Division. And I'll be talking today about our report titled Oregon Education Department Should Take Further Steps to Help Districts and High Schools Increase Graduation Rates that we released last December. As Will mentioned, this topic was on our audit schedule as graduation rates is an important issue, and this measure is one that Oregon, like other states, struggles with. Oregon's high school graduation rates have increased gradually, on average about 1% of a year that we looked at for the 5 years ending in 2015-16. Recent rates have come out where it's gone up about 2%, up to almost 77%. And so, as Will mentioned also, it trails the most recently available national average of 84% and falls well below Oregon's goal of all students graduating. Our audit objective was to determine how the Oregon Department of Education and school districts could help increase student four-year graduation rates in Oregon public high schools. The Audits Division decided to concentrate on high schools with middle and low range graduation rates, those that had less than 85%. We focused on traditional high schools that have not shown the same progress as the state as a whole, so that it did not show a 5% increase over 5 years. And we excluded alternative and online education as we had a separate concurrent audit underway on students at risk of not graduating those schools, which you'll hear about next. As you know, there have been recent state and ODE initiatives and efforts to improve graduation rates, though we found some areas for further attention. And those were in five sections in our report: help for specific student groups, more emphasis on middle schools, collect individual student performance data and assist districts in data analysis, more effective improvement tools, and enhanced collaboration and communication. Within the help for specific student groups to graduate, we talk about three different student groups: high school students who change districts, students at schools in mid-range graduation rates, and low-income students. During our school visits, staff often stated students transferring into their schools often struggle to graduate on time. From data provided by ODE, we found students who transfer school districts at any point during their high school career graduate at a rate roughly 30% lower than students who stayed in the same district. We found substantial differences persisted within every track student group, whether ethnicity or gender, and there were similar results for the prior two school years. ODE calculates and tracks student mobility rates, though this accounts for moves and changes in enrollment gaps during the school year, and the performance of these students are not analyzed. As students with mid-range graduation rates, those that fall between 67-85%, received limited improvement support from ODE, though many non-graduates were in these schools. In discussion with school officials, some were struggling to find effective approaches that work in their schools and wanted more support and guidance. For example, attendance is a recognized key area, but we heard attempts to increase attendance have not worked. The department's school and district improvement support targets mainly the lowest performing schools, which is important, but we don't want to miss on those mid-range graduation schools as well. Further guidance is needed to support economically disadvantaged students. More than half of Oregon students are classified as economically disadvantaged, and they make up more than 70% of students who do not graduate on time. Staff and students in high schools told us that poverty is the biggest challenge to graduating on time. Research has found students in poverty often miss school and have other challenges, such as food insecurity and limited access to health and school counseling services. There are some state efforts targeted to support economically disadvantaged students, such as recent studies of practices to better support students in poverty and a pilot trauma-informed training program in two high schools, but the gap in their graduation performance persists. We heard a lot of schools talking about wanting to have social workers in there, and ones that had lost that, how big of a safety net gap that provided for them, as an example. Graduation efforts have focused on indicators at the elementary and high school levels, with little attention at the middle school level or to student transitions from middle school. Research has found students with a very high risk of high school failure were chronically absent in middle school grades or already receiving failing grades in their middle school courses. Middle school attendance patterns in Oregon show chronic absenteeism begins to increase in middle school and rises through high school. Throughout elementary, middle, and high schools, disciplinary incidents, another indicator of on-time graduation, are the highest in some grades. The department strategy for improving graduation rates, as well as legislatively funded initiatives, have prioritized grade level efforts on early learning, elementary, and high school measures. And while these are important areas, there has not been much emphasis on middle grade performance. Also with middle schools, there were a few high schools during our visits that had strong coordination, with their middle schools to prepare incoming freshmen for high school coursework. Research has shown curriculum alignment between schools can improve student achievement. Excuse me, I want to take a drink. ODE's data collection efforts do not include detailed data on individual student course performance. Researchers have found student course performance is one of the strongest indicators of the likelihood of graduating. Having class performance data would help analyze when students are most likely to fall off track, which courses have high failure rates, and how student success or failure in specific courses ties to graduation. Making that kind of diagnosis could greatly help identify statewide issues and tailor improvement efforts to address them. We heard commonly in most of the schools that we visited that math was a big challenge in trying different initiatives around what could better support those students. Also, ODE could help schools better analyze which students are in danger of not graduating. Schools and districts have significant amount of data, including all the different predictors of education attendance, course performance, and behavior incidents. But staff at the districts and schools we visited have challenges in using data effectively to improve student performance, and we're wanting strategies for using data to change instruction and intervene with students, and they want that additional help. We found three tools, personal learning plans, student surveys, and district continuous improvement plans that could be used more effectively statewide to engage students and help with school improvement efforts. For personal learning plans, also education plan and profiles, either name, we heard from students there was limited support and focus on these in the schools, which in turn provide little value for students. When it comes to student surveys, few schools regularly solicited student feedback from all their students, and students said they were not able to provide much input for classes, school services, and activities to enhance the school climate and culture.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
Before you go on, would you repeat those three tools, please? One of them was district continuous improvement. The other is personal learning plans. And what was the third one?
Student surveys.
Okay. Yeah. Student surveys that focused, I presume, on substantive things, not whether or not the lunch was good.
No, more on, co-chair Johnson, members of the committee. No, more on safety, the school climate. I have a list of different ones for you, but if they feel they can talk to a teacher, if they feel they are important, there's different climate factors besides different activities they're interested in as well.
Thank you.
Let's see. Continuous improvement plans are required for all districts to complete, but had not been used to their potential for collaboration efforts. ODE recognized these shortcomings with them and have suspended the use for 2 years while they plan to improve them. We heard from schools and districts it's a lot to fill out and to provide, and they didn't get much feedback or any kind of guidance or support on what they could be doing. And so that's kind of part of hopefully that planning effort as well. There are two areas within the communications section that we have. The first is about internal coordination. The OD has increased its focus on internal coordination. Our interviews with agency staff indicate the agency still administers many programs in isolation. A lot of that comes from, I think, also from grant funding and kind of focusing on a different grant as opposed to being more collaborative. For example, staff said that for any given school district, there's not an effective method to identify which agency initiative that district is participating in. For example, we were interested in, when we were selecting the schools to go visit, we wanted to see what different supports they had received from the department, and there was not one place to go for that information for us.
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Yes.
How did you select what schools to go see, given the geographic sweep of the state and the differing levels of community engagement? Could you give a list of the schools that you visited?
I figured you'd ask that.
And how they were picked.
Okay. So the schools that we went to were Reynolds. We have three that are large size, three that are medium, and three that are small, and one that's very small based on size. The three larger were Reynolds High School, Sandy High School, and North Salem High School. The medium-sized schools were Hidden Valley High School, Madras High School, Roosevelt High School. The small were Umatilla High School, Myrtle Point, and Phoenix School. And then the very small was Elgin High School. Then we also talked with some comparator schools as well. Would you like those?
When you say comparator, help me understand how you're using that word.
So for the schools that we, sorry, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, so the name of schools I just gave you were ones we selected that were in the mid to low range graduation rates that we wanted to go to see why are they not showing progress of about 1% a year like the rest of the state? What are kind of their challenges? And so that's kind of the 10 that we picked there, and I'll go a little bit more into how we selected them. We also wanted to look at some comparator schools, which are ones that either based on the comparator schools that the department used or different demographics or locations that we were using, some schools that are showing higher graduation rates to get an idea of what are they doing that maybe could be incorporated or more focus that could be on our schools that we were focusing on.
Thank
sense.
You. Just one follow-up.
Yeah.
I don't know about Reynolds, but Roosevelt is in the Portland Public School System. Is Reynolds as well?
No.
Okay.
It is not.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you,
Representative.
Madam Co-Chair, yeah. While we've taken a break, I'll give you a little break,
thank
too.
You.
Can you outline to us how many people went to each of these schools? Who did you talk to? Did you look at the ELL programs and the programs for poverty students at these schools, which I think are the major impact on absentee and dropout rates?
Representative Wisnant, Co-Chair, member of the subcommittee. Let me back up. Okay. Your question one more time, please.
Thank you. No.
Thank you. So,
was it a team of two or three people at each of these schools? And did you go to principals? Did you go to teachers? Did you go to classrooms? Did you observe any classroom operations? And specifically, did you look at the ELL programs and the programs for students from poverty families, which I think have the major impact on our absenteeism and dropout rates?
Thank you for that. Co-chairs, Representative Wisnant. So on our audit, we had a team of two, myself and John Bennett. Also, we have our audit manager. So usually there's two of us that went to a school, either typically it was me and John, or else it was Sharon in my place. We talked to staff. So we talked to at least the principal and oftentimes another member of their administration. We talked to, depending on the school size, anywhere from 2 to 6 teachers. We asked them just for a selection of teachers to talk to as well. And then when it came to students, it varied. It was anywhere from, I think the minimum was 3, and it was up to almost 10 at one school as well. Just when we asked them to kind of give us a variety of students to talk to, too. We didn't want to pull kids out of classes too much. So we did not do any sitting in a classroom and watching any course going on. For ELL, we talked to some instructors, came up in our staffing discussions with that, but not specifically targeted that at every single school.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for committee members. The ELL programs I visited, you have different programs, but the one that and maybe later with the ODE or the Chief Education Officer, Mr. Gill, that it's a half an hour a day that ELL students get, a half an hour a day, and they take them out of the first grade or whatever, and they go in. That's not enough to get these kids back, in the time we need. And again, I repeat my statement that I think that this population of ELL, which is growing and growing, and the poverty students is really a factor in the. But thank you for the explanation of how you were operating. Thank you.
Before you start up again, so we don't keep interrupting you, I just have one question, if I could, they were talking and it gave me an idea. Now, how many of these schools that you did choose, and also the comparables, actually had grants or programs that they had been utilizing from the Department of Ed?
Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee, there were at least a couple of them that talked about the grants, because we asked as part of our questions, what kind of involvement do you have with the department? And a couple of them mentioned either prior SIG grants, or some had existing ones. I think they're almost still in the middle of a few. And I believe that some were getting some assistance through the school district improvement program as well.
And then to follow up on that, then you gave us some categories. You had low performance schools were getting more grants than middle, performance students.
More assistance.
Schools. Mm-hmm. And you also talked about, the difference between poverty and attendance as far as some of the issues. When you picked these schools, again, were you trying to cover all those areas or not, as far as what those schools were qualified or classified as?
Co-Chair McClain, members of the committee, when we selected schools, we were trying to get schools that had a variety of different demographics. So we knew that poverty is a big issue. We want to make sure we had a good representation in economically disadvantaged students. We want to try and hit different locations in geography around the state, things that are urban, things that are rural. So those are different factors. We want to make sure we hit schools that had similar enrollment characteristics to the state as best as we could. Mm-hmm.
So now we'll try and just listen. Here we go.
I believe I was talking about communication at the time.
Yes.
The other area was with helping districts and schools engage and communicate the importance of education graduation to families and communities. Engaging parents in times of greater community was a significant challenge for pretty much all the districts that we visited. They may have some good support with different maybe cultural family parent groups, but really getting the general consensus and a lot of full support is where they had a lot of challenge. High schools offer events to involve parents, though officials said participation is low. Even one school talked about sending report card grades and the numbers of high number of students who were failing. The one year only got one call from a parent. They were also talking about at different schools that some students were not aware of the opportunities that a diploma provides. They could see getting a job without one, possibly their parents in the past had, and they saw little value in putting forth the effort to graduate. And so they're looking for other assistance and other support and guidance in how they can try and kind of build that involvement, because everybody recognizes it is a best practice and it is important to have that parental involvement and encouragement. Additionally, officials at three rural schools also said their location gave them little opportunity to sustain partnerships with the community, as well as to participate in kind of grant opportunities as well. So our audit recommendations include developing strategies on supporting identified specific student groups, initiatives and measures focused on middle schools, and increased guidance to districts on coordination between middle and high schools, using student data, student learning plans, continuous improvement plans, and student feedback, and assessment of school climate, as well as enhancing data collection and reporting and improving internal and statewide education communication strategies. Thank you again, and any further questions or observations?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Green. So maybe you answered this when you were answering questions from the chair. I don't dispute your work because I don't know enough to dispute it. Did you reach conclusions the graduation rates are not what they should be because, and then you use the word studies, research, and researchers. Are you the study? Is it your research, or are you the researchers? Are you?
Senator, members of the committee, Senator Courtney, in our memory presentation and in our report, when I say researchers, it's outside studies. It's not, that's not us.
So
we found similar things. We found similar issues and resource support center has different initiatives or recommendations around those areas.
So how do you do this, if I may ask another question?
Absolutely.
I'm just fascinated. So you don't have a PhD in education. The man sitting beside you, you're auditors, right? You audit. That's what you do, audit. Mm-hmm. So where did you go to the Department of Ed and said, let us go into your library and we'll get the latest dissertations by a graduate student, University of Michigan or Duke or something that explains how you that because you were making statements about lunches and absenteeism, and I'm not disputing it, but I'm curious to know about where did you go to get, did you just, how do you do that? How do you find all these studies, and where is all this research coming from? What do you do?
Co-chairs, Senator Courtney, if I could just take a run at answering maybe a little perspective in general about how we go about audits. So you're right, we don't have...
Would you just say your name for the record?
I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Will Garber, Deputy Director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. So in terms of our audit process, one of the things that we're always looking for is criteria. And criteria can be best practices or promising practices. And sometimes criteria can come from research if it's well-established and you know, well-founded research. So whenever we start up an audit, we try to learn as much as we can about the topic at hand. We really try and immerse ourselves in it. Try to develop with the time that we have some expertise in the subject matter ourselves. So that's kind of from a general point of view. I don't know, Karen, if you have anything to add about the specific studies we looked at in this audit.
I didn't run out. Senator Corey, members of the committee. So for this one, we looked at different education literature out there, and ones that are studies that are recognized and utilized most often by other reports, other education. I can't think of the right word right now.
Well, don't worry. I'm not trying to ask you a difficult question. I'm just trying to get a feel for the words research, studies, and research. I just was really curious about that.
Like, for example, the Chicago Public City Public Schools Consortium has done lots of research in the areas of education and are utilized by lots of different states. And so that's one area that we went to as well. So as an example.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions? I have one. I think it's in the, I'm in the right report. Yeah. I was looking at figure two, which is, you know, the trend in the 4-year graduation rate and the 5-year graduation rate.
Okay.
You know, since I've been here, being a teacher for 42 years and watching some kids that they just needed more than 4 years to be able to graduate because of their personal skills, you know, situations at home, or, you know, just something that was happening in their life. And so I was wondering if you were you making any comments as far as if you thought it was, or are you just using the rule that we don't get full credit for people graduating on time unless we use 4 instead of 5? Because we have some 5-year programs in the state. And we have, you know, a significant amount of students, as you point out here, who do graduate in 5 years, but we have programs that we actually set that up to be available to them because they also get something else for it, and there's a lot of different pieces to that, but it might even be a connection to a college dual credit opportunity or something like that. So did you try to do anything with making that information be part of the you know, graduation data that you were looking at and or making your recommendations from?
So, Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee, so our point in having this here is we agree. It's our end result is to have kids graduate and be ready to move on to the next part of their life. And so, but the measure that we use in Oregon that we track a lot, as well as other states, is four-year graduation rate. But we didn't want to just have four-year graduation rate only in our report. So that's why you see figure two having both four-year and five-year.
And the other reason I asked that is the state of Oregon asks for 24 credits to graduate. Mm-hmm. And some of the other states have 18 credits to graduate. And so, you know, it might take students longer to do 24 credits than 18 credits because of some of the issues that I just talked about. So it just seems to me important to, you know, to put that in the scope of how we look at the report and how we look at those schools out there, those, you know, the different variety of schools that you looked at for a variety of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And even your segment of, you know, the people that don't graduate, 70% of them come from poverty, you know, level family, you know, circumstances, that in itself might tell you why some of those kids might be working, because they need to do that to be able to help with the support for their family. But I'm just, you know, I always like us to look at oranges and not apples and oranges and kumquats. But I wanted to get an understanding of what that part of the study was to, you know, give us in the way of background information or that type of thing. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sorry, Senator Courtney.
So just one last question. I was curious, did you study in schools which are doing well?
One more time, sorry.
Did you study any schools that are doing well when it comes to graduation?
Senator Courtney, co-chairs, members of the committee, we did. We looked at comparator schools. We had 6 different comparator schools that we looked at to see what things they are doing that maybe that the schools we were looking at are focused at could also be incorporated. Because if they're similar like schools and they're able to do it at the comparator schools, what would be the challenge or impact of having it at our schools?
The next question is loaded. So
okay.
There's 2 schools, Woodburn and Jervis, in my Senate district that are doing well. Okay. And did you conclude at any time when our school was doing well, that that the principal was the major player or was a significant player? Did you do any of that personal type of thing that their particular principal or superintendent was key in why this was happening?
Senator Courtney, co-chairs, I'll try and answer that. See if I'm following quite. When we went to the comparator schools, we talked to the principal and their administration staff to see what they're doing. And oftentimes it seems like the schools that are doing better have more structures in place and have models in place to really take forward those efforts and incorporate efforts. So like a student survey, are they just asking the students and kind of looking at it, or is it part of a structure where they're looking at different components of it, making sure that there is a teacher if someone's not feeling safe enough, that they have a teacher component for them? Are they incorporating different pieces into their professional development? What kind of structure or system do they have in place?
Okay.
And I understand leaders don't. Sorry.
Let's not believe it. You've answered the question away, so thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Senator Johnson.
I'm going to wait until the agency comes
forward,
please.
All right. Thank you. So, any other questions?
Yes. Thank you,
Madam
Co-Chair.
Senator, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I've been here longer than Wisnett, and I still get called Wisnett. I think the senator.
Everybody keeps doing that.
I don't know if it's a compliment or not, but this is a big task, and this is an important issue for the state of Oregon. I mean, we're embarrassed about our graduation rates and our dropout rates. You know. And do you feel that you had adequate time and staff to really, you know, dig in and help Department of Education, help the legislatures, help the governor get a handle on this problem and some strategy to make it better?
Can we take a round
of that
one?
Go for it.
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett, you know, we see if I can try to answer this question. I think with the objectives and scope we set, we did well, and I think we came up with some findings that can help the department. I think kind of what I'm hearing from your question is, I think we could have spent 2-3 years on this. The department has spent many years trying to crack this nut, and it's not easy. But I don't think that minimizes the results we have in our audit. I think we came up with some findings, and they agreed with them, things they can focus on that will help. Will it solve the problem? No, there'll probably be a lot more that's needed.
follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
I think the purpose of this committee and any of the legislature is we're supposed to try to help and guide. And I think, you know, it would have been great if you'd have brought us a silver bullet, and you didn't get us a silver bullet.
I wish we could have.
And that was what I guess we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked on education most of my career, and it's my philosophy that the child cannot learn if they come to school hungry. They cannot learn if they come to school without good health, whether that's visual screening or hearing or whatever. And so those are things that we have to really, if you're going to solve this problem, I think it's this committee, I'm on so many education committees now, I forget, we had a presentation about absenteeism. Absenteeism leads to graduation rate. If you don't go to school, you don't graduate. And so to me, you focus on why are they not there? Let's get them in school first. If you're not in school, they're not going to learn and they're not going to graduate. So, I mean, to me, our target, our tactical target first should be getting them to school. And so, as Senator John said, we can talk to the department when they come up. But like I said, I guess I was hoping I'd see more silver bullets.
Yeah, co-chairs, Representative Wisdom, I just one quick comment on the absentee thing. We did, at the beginning of our report, try to cover some of the initiatives that the department has sort of launched already, and they do have one on absenteeism. So I think we felt like it was probably more productive for us to look at some other areas.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
In looking at the absenteeism, did you look at any other issues, specifically the involvement of drugs in the schools? We've made it so easy in this state to demotivate our kids with easy access to drugs. I'm thinking particularly the high school kids. Did that come up in your conversations?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, are you asking about the industry around it or students using drugs?
I'm talking about student use of drugs.
That did not come up in our conversations. There was conversations about the concern about the marijuana grows and what impact that has on parent involvement and students staying in school.
Okay, so you've answered my question that yes, there was some.
It was for getting able to see getting jobs or having jobs without getting a high school diploma. So that was seen as, I don't have to go to school because my parents make enough money. I don't need a diploma. I can just follow that line of work. So that came up in a couple discussions at a couple of different schools.
You mean selling drugs?
the industry itself. So as of harvest of helping with growing it and harvesting it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Boy, that's an indictment. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you for answering our questions today. At this time, if we could ask the agency to come up. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you. Co-chairs McLean, Johnson, members of the committee, I'm Colt Gill, and as of action in the Senate Monday, I'm the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction for Oregon. So I appreciate that action. And I have with me our Acting Chief of Staff, Cindy Hunt. And because I'm on day two officially, Cindy's here to answer any historical questions as well. So that'll be helpful for us. So in relation to the graduation audit by Secretary of State's office, we do agree with the recommendations that were made. And in many cases, have already implemented some policies and programs to address the issues that were raised. Some of those are longtime programs. Some of them are fairly new programs. Although the audit does focus.
Yes. Let me just stop right there. Okay. You've implemented programs. Some of them are old. Some of them are new. And I'm afraid now I'm going to reveal how cranky I am about this. You guys ought to be just shocked at these findings. I mean, this is embarrassing. As long as I've been around here, we have talked about spending money to collect data. I've never seen one scintilla of evidence that that's been successful. So I'm trying to feel out when you say we agree with the audit findings, which I think are devastating, and we're instituting programs, some old, some new. Elucidate. What are they?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, if I can continue, I will talk
Please.
About several of the programs, and then I'm happy to answer, go deep into any one of them that.
Well,
you
pointed out Ms. Hunt is here with the historical.
Yes.
And I want to talk about why we keep talking about the same stuff biennia after biennia, and we're still embarrassed nationally with these horrible graduation rates. So please, I'm sorry I pounced so early. Go ahead and see if you can convince me I'm wrong.
I don't know that I'll do that.
I don't know that you will either.
One of the things I wanted to point out is that although the audit does focus on certain student groups that are in our opportunity gaps or graduation gaps, we believe there is more work to do with all of the student groups, including students of color, tribal students, English language learners, students in poverty, in order to set them up for success. We do look forward to improving our recent success in reducing those gaps. So at the last release of graduation rates, when you look at the last three-year history, Oregon's graduation rates have increased 4.7% percentage points over those 3 years. For specific groups, we've increased 7 percentage points or more. So in some areas, we are closing the gaps. For example, for our Hispanic Latino students, they're up 7.6% over that same time period. Black African American students, 7.4%. Students who identify as multiracial, 7.6%. Students identified as special education, 7.7%. Our students who have been in English language learner programs, up 9.7%. And migrant students, up 7.5%.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
So all those increases, though, still feed up into an average 74% graduation.
Absolutely.
Which means that those statistics were really bad before these improvements in those subsets.
Yes. Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, that is absolutely true. And I would say that they continue to be, there continue to be gaps. So those gaps are being reduced to some degree, but they all still exist. And when you look at the right now, about 23% of students who do not graduate within 4 years, they do not look demographically like the state of Oregon. So they are much more, many more students of color, many more students in poverty, many more tribal students. And so that continues to be the area of focus.
Okay, let's go on.
So to speak to some of the programs that we have in place or are putting into place for these, we do have culturally responsive student plans now. So we have an English learner statewide plan that includes dual language and two-way bilingual grant opportunities for school districts to go beyond the 30 minutes a day in a pullout program. We do have...
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just so frustrated. you have grant programs. Okay, that's fine in Portland public schools where they have rooms full of grant writers. What are you doing in rural school districts where the bus driver might also be the grant writer, might also be the custodian? I mean, that's obviously hyperbolic, but are these grant opportunities distributed so that little school districts that don't have deep staff benches can compete on a level playing field?
Yes, Senator Johnson, or Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. So there is a mix. This particular grant program is delivered by identification of meeting certain standards for English language learner students. So districts that are not meeting certain standards are offered the opportunity. So it isn't a competitive grant process. It's a grant process through identification of students who have needs that aren't being met by the school district.
Follow up? I'll let him finish after this. Do these come with performance measures? What range of money is provided? And who tracks the performance measures?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. So these are based on both the identification or through performance measures, and they are evaluated on their progress towards performance goals. The legislature... provided $12 million per biennia. I'm not sure if it went beyond last biennia. This is House Bill 3499 that I'm speaking to. So it's a $12 million allocation, and that's what's spent in these school districts.
Any clawback if they fail?
Yeah. Co-Chair McLean and Senator Johnson. So in the case of 3499 specifically, those districts who were named after the course of 4 years, if they don't meet those standards, what happens is that the department was given the authority to specifically direct how they would spend the amount of money associated with the 0.5 English language learner weight from the state school fund. So in that way, I mean, there is a bit of a stick at the end of this.
May I ask a question that may be helpful?
Sure. I didn't hear the stick.
Okay. I think the stick is that if they have gotten one of these grants, that they basically, and they haven't been able to raise those rates the way we want them to close the gap, then the department actually gets to tell them how they will spend the money that
Correct.
They get for the ELL learner program and for the, you know, for the per pupil weighted amount of money that mm-hmm. they get from the state.
Co-Chair McLean, you are correct. Right now, all districts get additional weights in the state school fund if they have EL students, but the state school fund is a distribution formula. It doesn't necessarily dictate how you spend the money. Under this program, if you're one of these school districts that was named within 4 years, if you don't meet the standards, we're directing you how to spend the money.
And so say your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Cindy Hunt, Acting Chief of Staff, Department of Ed.
Madam Chair.
Yes, and Representative Wisna.
Thank you very much. My mother appreciates it, or my father. My name's the second name on 3499. It's the Speaker's bill. And when we gave the $12 million to spend to help improve our ELL program, we established a committee that's going to look and be stakeholders, nonprofits that are concerned about the performance for ELL. And legislators are going to look at how they're doing and monitor that. And you've been explained to by Mrs. Hunt and our co-chair about how they will lose some authority. You know, the comment was just made that this formula, I think for my opinion going out the door, is that we really need more accountability on how money's being spent. $800 million a year comes out of the state school fund for ELL and poverty students. And there's really no accountability of how that's spent. As Mrs. Hunt said, you know, they can, except for this $12 million, they can do whatever they want to, dual immersion or whatever they want, but they don't have to account for that money. It's even worse for poverty students. There's no accountability of how the school districts, and I have a great friend who's a great superintendent, but he is honest with me and says, I take that money and spread it across my whole budget. Now, that's his authority, and he can do that. But these kids, poverty and ELL students, we've got to do a better job, or we're not going to succeed. We know by 2025, Oregon's supposed to have over 50% Latino. We've got to help the Latino students succeed, and not only K-12, but higher education. Thank you.
So at this point, let's go forward and try to do as much of the report as we can, and then we will have plenty of questions.
Great. Thank you, Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee. So I'll pick up with a couple more of these culturally responsive plans that are underway. For our American Indian Alaska Native State Plan, it includes the tribal attendance pilot project that provides family advocates that are selected by both the tribe and the school district to work to improve relationships between the communities that these schools serve and improve chronic absenteeism rates within tribal communities. We also have the African American Black Student Success Plan that does also send out grants for pilot projects across the state of Oregon. These are competitive grants to community-based organizations, nonprofit organizations that work with school districts to improve outcomes for our African-American Black students across Oregon. We also have the chronic absenteeism statewide plan that was funded in the last session. The legislature made an investment of $7.4 million in this plan that'll include three areas of support. One will be a statewide campaign that provides districts with materials to use to speak to their community around the importance of being at school every day and how that can lead students to a path to graduation and readiness for what comes next. It also targets about 30 school districts that have been experiencing very high levels of chronic chronic absenteeism that have impacted their graduation outcomes and provide specific coaching to those school districts. And then finally, it provides regional supports, likely through the education service districts, that school districts can take advantage of for additional coaching. We also have the career pathways and course alignment work going on, specifically with CTE programs in Oregon. We are rolling out new counseling guidelines, comprehensive guidance, and counseling framework that creates support and recommendations for education plan and profile use for every student grade 7 through 12. We have new materials on the Oregon Department of Education website that recognize and identify and disseminate best practices proven to work in other districts in our state to improve graduation outcomes. Some of these materials are developed by the districts that implemented them. And it's a two-way system so that districts can go on and communities can go on, read these materials, and provide additional feedback, ask questions as well. We are underway with redesigning the state school report cards so that they can be much more effective communication tools to families and communities in terms of determining where districts need to focus so that students aren't being left behind. And then the most significant recent investment is in the High School Success Fund. That's Measure 98. In this fund, districts are required to make use of what was described earlier and is typically referred to as an early warning system or an early identification and intervention system, where districts make use of longitudinal data to make educational decisions about students, identify early who needs support. Typically, these focus on identifying course performance at different levels, identifying absenteeism issues, behavior issues, and in Oregon, because we have essential skills demonstrations, also include state assessments. So I think I will stop there so you have time to ask your questions. I get the feeling there are more.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Johnson.
I got a ton of them. Let me start by identifying in the audience a young colleague who has been with me today. This is Joseph Christian, who happens to be a high school senior from Klatskanai. And I will ask him when we're done with this hearing what he thinks some of the barriers to success are. He's not going to be one of those kids. He's already got applications into Stanford. He's been selected at a couple of colleges. But I'd be curious to have an on-the-ground opinion from a real high schooler. My curiosities are these. I want to just lay down a marker right now about the temptation to change the credit requirements or the standards in some way to make our ratings look better. I think that in order for our kids to compete in a global economy, we have got to have rigor, we have got to have standards, and we have got to expect performance and not change the goalposts to try to make these bad findings look better. The five findings are astonishing to me. The longitudinal data that you just made reference to, I forget how many biennia ago it was that we were going to put in a very expensive computer system to track longitudinal data. I don't know what the status of that system now is, Ms. Hunt. We've been working on it a long time and spent a lot of money. Are we up and going?
Co-Chair Johnson, the longitudinal data system is a program of the Chief Education Office, and so we would need to get back to you on details about that through them.
You've just made Exhibit A for me. It's this all the time. You guys are the Department of Education, and I'm asking about a program we've invested a lot of money in, and you don't know the answer? You've got to go to the chief education officer to find out? I'm asking about one of the failure findings in this audit that says we're not tracking data. And I'm...
Can I say something about that? I would agree that, you know, I thought you were going to say it's right now in its pilot program. We're doing training. And we're actually putting together who the actual users are going to be for this data system. We are in now stage two of the actual implementation, and we've just had, you know, presentations in front of two education committees on exactly where we are and who the expert was that set it up and what some of the challenges are going to be. So I do think that we do need to have, you know, conversations with, you know, both offices going together, but they have been making presentations, and I wasn't here when you started, but I am here to hear those reports in my K-12 committee. And I have actually gone to a committee meeting over in Monmouth and sat with both university and the Department of Ed and the other office, and we had a very thorough developed a programmed presentation on where we are and what we still need to do. We've got universities that are public on this data system, but we do not have the private universities on it. And I know we need to get that information as well. So, I mean, I know we're still in process, but I think we've come a long way from where you started.
Well, I'm thrilled you were here to testify for the department. Thank you for that information.
Co-Chair McLean and Co-Chair Johnson, if I may. So, until I was named to this current position, I was at the Chief Education Office last year. And everything Representative McLean shared is accurate. And I would say one other missing piece that we have in that data system is military service data and education that students receive through the military programs. But the longitudinal statewide data system that has been developed does cover early learning, the entire K-12 system, the higher education system, and workforce. So it has some excellent data that can help us make policy-level decisions that can guide the legislature and our various commissions and boards that oversee these programs in determining where investments should be made that can make a greater difference in our overall graduation rates. However, the system that has been identified by the Secretary of State's office is a different system that is a student-specific, student-level data system that really needs to provide data at the educator and student level.
Some of us thought that's what we were buying, that we could take Billy Smith and follow Billy Smith through. You talked about early intervention. I believe that what was advertised to the legislature was to be able to track Billy Smith from kindergarten all the way through, see those early warnings, see when Billy falls out of class, sees when Billy's absenteeism starts. And I think you're telling me that doesn't exist, but we've got some higher level data collection that is giving us some kind of trend information.
Co-Chair Johnson, what I would say about that is that the system pulls directly about Billy Johnson, but it de-identifies that data at the state level. The state does not collect every data point on every student in our system right now. That's some of the recommendation that is in the Secretary of State's audit. We collect, for example, freshman on track data for students in high school, which tells us how many credits that they earn as a freshman, which is the key indicator for graduation success. However, in the state of Oregon, we don't collect actual grades. We don't collect the on track information from school districts for 10th, 11th, or 12th grade. So we have this one indicator, a snapshot at 9th grade at the state level. School districts own all this data, so they can review all this data at will at the local level.
So somebody can go to Billy Smith's attendance and see that it dramatically fell off at some point, and that might be indicative that this child is struggling.
At the local, Co-Chair Johnson, at the local level, that's
true. Let me ask one more question, Madam Chair, and it has to do with these district improvement plans. Mm-hmm. The last year that now Congresswoman Bonamici, then Senator Bonamici, was here, she and I worked to look at these improvement plans. One of my districts brought me their improvement plan. It looked like the Manhattan phone directory. And massive amounts of data, and I can only guess at the cost to accumulate that. So I called the department and I said, what do you guys do with this information? And I was stunned to find out that a handful of them were selected and reviewed as sort of an average snapshot. And some of those requirements were withdrawn by the legislature to do these continuous improvement. Tell us, if you would, how what is now passing as district improvement plans are used, and how rigorously do you go through them and initiate a dialogue with the school presenting the material to see what guidance the mothership, the Department of Education, can give a local district to up their game?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, if I may, I'd like to answer this from two perspectives. So previous to the last year working at the chief education office, I was the superintendent in the school district in Eugene Bethel School District for 10 years. And so I have a lot of more experience, honestly, on the school district side of preparing those plans. And what I will say is that there are pieces of the information in those plans that the Oregon Department of Education needs to determine whether we're meeting standards and guidelines to fulfill our obligations for Title I, Title III, Title IIA, Title IV, a number of different block grants that the districts get to primarily serve disadvantaged students, economically disadvantaged students. And from the district perspective, I would say that was all needed data for them to be able to release dollars to the local level. At times, over the 10 years in that district and the nearly 20 more years in previous districts where I was doing that work, there were different levels of data that were requested through those plans, sometimes pre-filled by the department, sometimes district provided data that I, as a practitioner, questioned whether the department really needed. And oftentimes, so that the department could have a single source that was searchable within the data systems that were available at that time, all districts had to comply with providing this data within a certain format, and these plans and goals and everything within a required format for the Department of Ed. Oftentimes, in our 197 districts, the board planning process or the district planning process did not align with this district improvement plan process. So districts oftentimes had their own improvement plans that they regularly reported to their school boards and interacted with their school administrators around. And then they tried to present all the information in those plans on this ODE device. So that's my talking from the school district perspective. Now I'm an ODE. My understanding, and this started before I arrived, and it's part of this two-year delay of the or suspension of the district improvement plan to update it, partly to meet the requirements of the Every Student Succeeds Act and partly to redo it so that it makes more sense for districts. The end goal, as my understanding today, is that districts that have their own plans, as long as they hit some of those criteria that the department needs to provide accountability to the federal government on entitlement programs, they will be able to turn in the plan that they use week out, week in, month out, month in. And so that's the design that we're trying to move towards, is so that it can be flexible and district specific, and the department will be the one that looks for the key information.
Format notwithstanding.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Was that the end of the? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll ask a question from that last dialogue, and that is, I think the longitudinal plan will also be able to pick up some of that information that you can glean, and then we'll use that in that ongoing, I guess I would call it connection, to the data about both the staff and the student. And even though it'll be encoded, or whatever you call that, what's it called, encrypted, then you will have a chance to see where the teachers are going and you know how they're lasting and how they're doing and where they're going. And then also, even if students move, we're still going to get whatever it was. Jimmy John will know when he started in our system, and even if he moves, we've figured out how to do that. And even if he changes names or uses different names, we'll be able to figure out how, through this new program, how to keep that going, so that we seriously have one student that we have scoped all the way from being a five-year-old all the way through possibly even where he goes for a career. Now, that's my understanding of how good that's going to be. Is that true?
Yes. Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee, I agree. I believe that that is the kind of data to create programs and policy-level decisions that we'll have access to. And I would tie that back, actually, to one of the pieces that the Secretary of State's audit pointed out, which was this low graduation rate among highly mobile students, so students who are moving between high schools during the high school career. So that is something that the department has had some data on, but has not highlighted, has not publicly presented information on. But those numbers are very low. This year, we did, for the first time, deliver publicly graduation count information on homeless students in Oregon. So these are students, in our definition, who experienced homelessness at least once, maybe more times, during their high school career. And the graduation rate for those students in Oregon is 50.7%. So we have a real issue with students with high mobility, students who experience homelessness, and your tie back to how can we use the data to show that when a student leaves one place, how can we pick up and provide the same levels of support that one school district may have figured out works and apply those in the new school. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the areas where we're I'm trying to do this work.
Thank you. Representative Wisnut.
Thank you. Mr. Gill, can the ESSA came in under the Obama administration. It's been now run by the Trump administration. Can you comment on how ESSA is rolling out and how that's going to affect your ability to answer these Secretary of State and improve our graduation and absentee rate? Is that having a positive, negative impact? And you're going to be able to work with what my understanding, I was on the NCSL's, I'm on the Education Committee, and it's basically ESSA gives the states more authority to do whatever you have to do. Mm-hmm. That was the intent of the legislation. And but I'm not sure how with the Trump administration, that also the money and how much money that's going to affect your building.
Yes. Okay. Co-chairs McLean, Johnson, Representative Wisnett. My understanding at this time is that we do have more flexibility than we have had in the past under either the No Child Left Behind Act or the waivers around the No Child Left Behind Act. There is an effort for us to be able to allow districts to braid their funding more freely than they have in the past. So in the past, each of these entitlement programs that we talked about were distinct, and there were very few options for districts to use any of their Title I dollars, for example, for economically disadvantaged students in any of the other programs, Title III for migrant students or any other program. Now there, we can be more thoughtful about what our student needs, and that students don't find themselves just in one category often. They are often in multiple categories, and we can allow students or districts to weave those programs together. We do have concerns around how these programs will be funded into the future as the federal budgets roll out. We're watching that carefully and trying to keep districts informed of where those changes may occur.
One little quick fast follow-up.
Yes, sure.
More reporting, less reporting?
Co-chairs McLean and Johnson, Representative Wisnett, members of the committee, I think that's a question I'll have to take back to our federal programs team. I'm not aware of changes in reporting to the federal system, but we can find that out and get back to you.
Because that's extensive.
It is extensive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Johnson.
How does the agency, both of you mentioned, or at least I think you did, Mr. Gold, about grants, pass-through grants that go to not-for-profits that provide certain menu of services as well as ESDs. What is your tracking mechanism to make sure that that money is spent efficaciously? And the reason that I ask is that there have been some recent instances in Oregon where not-for-profits that are recipients of state money fail. Mm-hmm. So what are your fail-safes to make sure that the taxpayers are getting results, not just throughput, but results for the grant investments that you're making in ESDs and not-for-profits?
Co-Chair Johnson, thanks for that question. I can share a couple of things with you. And again, I think this may be one where I need to take back and get more information just because of my time in the department. But I know a few things that do happen. So we do require targets to be set for these programs. We require regular reports back to us on how dollars are spent and what the outcomes for students are that are receiving the services, excuse me, including the numbers of students receiving those services. And then in most of these newer programs that have been released, such as the African American Black Student Success Plan grants, there's a third party evaluator that works both with the department and goes and visits those programs to determine the outcomes.
And one last question, and this is for the Repository of Institutional History, Ms. Hunt. Are all corners of the state now covered by STEM hubs?
Co-chair Johnson, co-chair McLean. Not quite. Yeah, but let me get back to you with a map of where they're at exactly.
I happen to know one of them pretty well.
Okay.
And in my interactions with the department have gotten completely unsatisfactory responses. And if career technical education is a priority of the governor, and I think I've heard today a priority of you all, how can you justify not covering the whole state? I mean, you're just functionally saying to some parts of the state, don't apply. You don't exist in our worldview. So I would like, frankly, in writing, an explanation of the coverage, what plan there is to rectify that, and why it is that it's okay to not fund some parts of the state.
Co-Chair Johnson, so we can get that to you. I do want to let you know that that will be in coordination with the Chief Education Office, as that's where the STEM Council and STEM Hub operate from.
But once again, we will work with them.
I'm saying we will work with them to get you that answer.
Thank you.
But since you're going to do that work, I think it's important to integrate that with Measure 98, because we are covering some areas with not just a hub. We're not doing hubs on some levels, because we've got money that's going to each of the schools that, you know, have a program and a place to start it. And we just went through all of that in the, you know, some of the budget work last year, trying to make sure that there was integration but not duplication. So there may be some coverage there, and it would be nice to have that as part of the mapped work as well.
Co-Chair McLean, we can add that in. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you being here today. I want to say this because I feel awful. You guys have been sitting there. We're trying to keep this new process going. We're going to let our staff, LFO, give some recommendations, and so we're not going to get to the second audit today, and our goal is to put it on next Wednesday's agenda, and I apologize. Okay. And staff, if you could give our evaluation recommendations and analysis.
With that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, a couple of things we pointed out is that when looking at the findings and recommendations of the audit, it's important to remember the governance structure that exists in Oregon. So when you're looking at national data, there's so many things that are unique to Oregon, and one of those is the governance structure. And that as we go on and work on the recommendations being implemented, discussions on finding that correct balance between statewide requirements and consistency across the state and local control in determining the highest priority for use of resources has always been and will continue to be an ongoing discussion and a fundamental policy and budget discussion. In addition, there are findings and recommendations in the audit that to implement will require other agencies' involvement. A number of those issues may be in the Department of Human Services, for example, and coordination will need to be done with those agencies on those findings and recommendations. As noted and discussed, one of the problems of using national data in this arena is that graduation requirements are so significantly different across the states. Oregon is one of 8 states with the highest level of requirements for credits for graduation, for example, at 24 credits. There are 4 states only requiring 13 credits for graduation, and not surprisingly, their graduation rates are significantly higher. So when looking at those rankings, we would suggest in the future it may be more telling to ensure that Oregon's graduation rates are compared to states with similar standards or in addition to what's already provided, or as well to evaluate programs and data within the state on the effectiveness and efficiency to have more comparable standards.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Real quick. Is the 24 for a Oregon graduation diploma, or is that a school? Because some schools have more than the state requirement.
I believe the 24 is the state requirement.
Is that okay?
Yes, some
so
have
24.
26.
Okay. Yeah.
There's some with 26.
I forgot the numbers. Thank you. I know we added English and math or something that, thank you.
It should be noted that that currently the state is seeing improvement in graduation rates, in fact, statistical improvement. And as you look at the timing, we point out looking at the timing of future audits, this does not necessarily move slowly, as the auditors pointed out. It can be programs that impact middle school. You may not see that data for several years in terms of improvement. So
the audit does not opine really on recent changes in programs, as it rightfully shouldn't, because that data is likely not to come out for some time. So we recommend that if the Secretary of State is requested to conduct or would like to conduct an audit in the near future on graduation rates or initiatives, that is something that would be discussed with the committee about how best to do that. It is likely that it would be very worthwhile to have an audit on some of the programs, such as the ones being implemented out of Ballot Measure 98, but it's probably several years in the future. At least sufficient time would need to be discussed to have meaningful results there. Finally, again, we would point out that if there is changes in standards that are related to then changes in rates, those mm-hmm. need to be fully discussed. As Co-Chair Johnson pointed out, if, for example, graduation standards were to be reduced and rates go up, that context would need to be there of what would those rates have looked like if standards had not been changed.
And we're not suggesting that they change, as Senator Johnson pointed out.
Correct. Finally, again, we would note that a number of the recommendations will require additional funding or resources in one or more agencies, and that any such discussion related to funding and staffing needs to be done in the context of the full budget and policy discussion so that all priorities can be weighed and will need to be discussed in the 2019 session. And with that, we would recommend acknowledging receipt of the report.
So, yes, Representative.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. I think that I was sort of surprised that the audit didn't look at counseling and the social needs. I mean, those, again, you know, my basic thing on health and being a full stomach. But my visits with the schools, more and more teachers, more and more counselors are working on social issues and from that family. You know, we talk about early childhood, we talk about parenting. I talked to counselors at Ben Lapine, and they say they're not help. Their main part of their job is not helping you get a scholarship or deciding which college to go to or anything like that. They're addressing social issues, family issues. Scared the hell out of me when they told me how many kids in high school are on suicide watch. So I don't know, you know, we really need to continue to focus on being sure that the early childhood, that those want to come to school ready to learn. I had third grade teachers in saying they had kids coming in that were not potty trained. So how do you teach them if they're not even potty trained in the third grade? So we've got this, you know, it's society-wise and family, you know, there's so many issues, but we do need to focus on helping provide those kids in early 1, 2, 3 with, you know, parenting or, you know, get to address those issues. It's tough. It's really tough.
I agree with you 150%, and I do feel, though, that the auditor did make a comment that they heard, you know, when there were some areas about where did they want support, that they mentioned again counselors and social workers. I think, though,
mental health.
Yeah, and mental health. But I think what the representative was saying, which I think is important, is that that has to be part of the evaluation tool as well. It can't just be a comment made by folks you guys go and interview. It's got to be, you know, part of the evaluation, because we're realizing over and over again attendance is having problems because we've got problems at home and they're not coming. And so if we're really going to look at our system and how it's working and why it's working, well, then we need to look at how many counselors do you have and how many social worker and wraparound services are we able to provide, or how do we get into those nonprofit wraparound services. So I would just say that I agree with the representative. That's a very important area and part of the bigger picture, but it's not just comments you bring back from them. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I didn't see it as being part of the evaluation tools. And if it was part of the evaluation tools, I'm happy to have you share that. So you don't have to do it now, but just send it to us so that we're looking at the right page. But I did not see that as the evaluation tool. So Senator.
Several people, the witnesses as well as the panel, have suggested that we're all in this together, that there is a certain degree of needed collaboration among and between agencies. You guys with your chief education officer and the department made the point over and over again, we continue to act in silos. And so my question is, this is a pretty significant set of audit findings. This is the kind of, if it was in the format of a management letter, if it had come to a corporation, I would make the assumption that they would be working with their board to redress some of this. This is pretty bad. And my question to you guys is, to what degree is this audit shared? I would see your partners being the 197 districts. I would certainly see them being the HEC. I would see them being the chief education officer. And I would very much like to get on the record your interest as an agency in finding those tables that are set with your peer organizations and your natural constituencies, and some representation that you would talk about this with them. I hate to see these audits become snapshots in time that boil down to give us more money and we'll be able to hire the counselors and the therapists and all of the rest. And I don't make light of that. Mm-hmm. But also there are some systemic management issues here. And before we adjourn for the day, I would love to have your comment on what, how you're going to disseminate this report, whose advice you're going to take, who you think your natural constituencies are, to sit down and talk about this and say, how do we fix it? This shouldn't be a doorstop in somebody's office. This ought to be a living, breathing document with suggestions for management improvement.
Co-chairs McLean, Johnson, members of the committee, I agree. So the audit was public, and so it was published in around the state of Oregon. And I realize that's not necessarily what you're speaking to, but working directly with our partners. So we do, the agencies do work closely together. Chief Education Office helps coordinate the Education Cabinet with the Higher Ed Coordinating Committee, ODE, and the two divisions, and TSPC as well. And so we have brought this to that table and will continue to. We do see this, though. I'm going to be clear that the recommendations in here, we agree with all of them. We think there are other and more items that we need to do to impact graduation outcomes in Oregon. So we do see this as a piece, and we are regularly interacting with our 197 school districts, 19 ESDs, and other partners and community organizations on these issues.
I would just conclude by asking if you would mind providing to the professional staff an org chart of education in Oregon. Who are all these? How do you connect with, I mean, if those folks that are either steeped in it at the state or the national level with NCSL or sit on the policy committees have the benefit of knowing things that some of us that don't sit on those committees don't know. I would welcome having an org chart with names in it. There's been quite a bit of turnover since you arrived. Mm-hmm. And if you could provide that to the professional staff and they could disseminate it, I would very much appreciate that.
Okay. Co-chairs Johnson and McLean, members of the committee, I believe we can provide an org chart of the cross-agency with names. So you'll have all the agencies. Some of the other pieces you talked about, I don't know that they would fit into an org chart without it being dizzyingly confusing, but we could provide lists of the various committees. ODE works with about 38 advisory committees on the various projects, some of which I described here, some we didn't talk about. So we can provide that list and we can give you the names of those folks.
For those 38 advisory committees where there may be elements of this audit that are germane to their deliberations, do we have your acknowledgement that this audit will be disseminated to those?
Co-chairs Johnson and McLean, members of the committee. So I don't know that for every one of those it fits to take the entire audit in. We have a number of recommendations within the audit. Some of those are applicable to some of those advisory groups, and we would take in the work on those and continue to get their input on the specific areas. And then again, like I said, it's we're doing more. We're attempting to do more to improve graduation outcomes than what the audit identifies. So some of them we're working on additional items outside the audit, but also aimed at graduation.
I would take that answer as a sorta.
Can I ask a question? Okay, so yes. Like I sit on the advancement of a teacher council.
Yes.
Would you consider that to be one of the 38?
That actually is not because
so
it's
that'll be a 39. Okay.
That'll be a 39.
So, but if you, to your comment though, I mean, I understood your thought about how we focus in those advisory committees on different things.
Right.
So what you're saying to me is that you would want to focus or concentrate on the piece from the audit that applied to the work in those 39 or 38 or however many committees.
Exactly.
And but I think what the senator asked was, would it hurt to give a link or, you know, share the fact that there is an audit out there that has to do with graduation rates, and we would really like you to take a look at it. I mean,
thank you. I'm not asking you to publish, you know, 40 bazillion copies of this and put one in everybody's hands. But the acknowledgement that there is an audit and a link to all of those advisories, people are doing the chair time to try to be helpful, and I think this is an element in being helpful.
Okay, co-chairs Johnson and McLean, I apologize. I did misunderstand. I thought you meant working directly with them on each of the issues, and we do take pieces of it to the different groups. So the Educator Advancement Council, for example, would be areas of it that would tie to educator preparation and workforce development. So that's what we would work on. But yes, we could provide links.
I apologize if I was less than artful in how I posed the question.
So now, so we don't lose a quorum, we need to quickly make, I need a motion to accept the recommendations.
Madam Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation on the Department of Education High School graduation rate audit.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, then they are accepted. Thank you very much for that. Okay, at this time, I know we're all going to other meetings, so unless there's anything for the good of the order. Yes, Senator Courtney.
I got to be careful here. I don't want upset anybody, but is my wife was a junior high school teacher in the most crowded junior high school in the state at the time for many, many years, as well as a coach. I have in my office young people who have children, and one of the young person's children is with disabilities. And all I'm going to say is that I don't, there's been philosophies expressed, and all of you are smarter than I am, you're new to this. But as an older person, very old person, we've got a joint committee I've helped the speaker put together to save the world. But somewhere in all this, there should be a small paragraph, a footnote, that number of teachers, yes. Counselors, yes. Number of kids in a classroom, yes. Size of schools, yes. Going on. But somewhere when the parent, I'm going to come down very hard, the parent is unable or unwilling, can't, for all kinds of reasons, and I'm not trying to be pejorative here about parents, cannot, will not, or is not there. You're not, you're somewhere, no matter how much we do, and we got to do more. I'm not trying to take away from your school district. But somewhere that, the magnitude of that is unbelievable. My wife, she got burned out, not because the school was so big, or she didn't have great principals. She still has, she has immense respect. Many of them have passed away. It's when the parents wouldn't come to parent-teacher meeting. It just killed her. She'd come home. When we were dating and they're married, she just would go drive her crazy because she spent all this time in class preparation. She loved these kids. They were 6th, 7th, and 8th. And we've changed that number. We've changed it. And without that, she just couldn't. She could only do so much. And she didn't blame counselors. She didn't blame principals. She just wanted at least one parent to come to parent-teacher meetings just so she could talk about the child. So I'm all for you auditors, I'm happy for you, and I'm all for you smart people. But I do, and you know, you can only do so much, but I have three school districts, and I have a number of schools where parents are very involved and others that aren't. So I just, for what it said, because we're talking philosophies here, and you're all right, you're all perfect, but I have to say somewhere, I hope there's a little paragraph, because I don't know what you do. What a teacher does, what a principal does, what a coach does. I could go on and on, a school board does. Parents, you know, and it's just the way it is. So I don't know why I said it, but I did feel I should say it because I do think it's relevant to some extent. I got to say it.
I think it's relevant too. So thank you. At this time, if there isn't anything else for the good of the order, I'd like to close the audit JLAC meeting for today, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you for being here today, everybody.